It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. On this weekend's show, we are focusing on the Motherlode Regional Juvenile Detention Facility. It's designed to be an update on what has been taking place out at the facility on Justice Center Drive next to the jail and courthouse. Joining us on the program are Tuolumne County Chief Probation Officer Dan Hawks and Assistant Probation Officer Annie Hockett. It's great to have you both on Motherlode Views.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'll start first with Dan Hockett, the Chief Probation Officer. How long have you been in that role now?
So I've been the Chief Probation Officer for 3 years now, a little over 3 years.
And then Annie Hockett, how about you?
So I've been in the role of Facility Superintendent for about the last 2 years.
Okay. So what, Dan Hawks, what did you do prior to this position?
So I did, I taught a little bit. I taught in an alternative ed classroom, which kind of exposed me to the probation work. Did a long-term subbing gig before that, but I've been doing this job as a probation officer for 23 years, so I'd say this is like my primary career that I've been doing.
And Annie Hockett, how about you? How did you get involved with probation?
Yeah, so I started with the county in 2004, actually, as a social worker with Child Welfare Services, and then kind of pivoted to doing some mental health-focused work, and then that's actually what brought me to the facility. I started with working with probation at the facility shortly before it opened as the behavioral health clinician there.
Very good. So as I mentioned, we are going to talk about the Motherlode Regional Juvenile Detention Facility. You know, Dan Hawks, can you tell us about when this facility first opened and how it's evolved?
So we first opened in March of 2017. And, you know, we really did spend a lot of time focusing on the programming, making sure things were great for the youth that were there or going to be there, and hiring staff, preparing staff. So, you know, that was our primary focus. It's a beautiful facility. I don't know if you've ever been on a tour, but I'd like to invite you, if you haven't, to come check it out. It's a pretty unique place. And, you know, everyone that looks at it, from the state to locals, grand juries, really say it's a state-of-the-art facility. And so we're very proud of our juvenile facility.
Have there been some changes at the state level over the past few years that have kind of impacted the facility?
Sure. We're all going through juvenile justice realignment, which essentially means the state is getting out of the juvenile justice game. And essentially there is no safety net or place for, you know, the youth that commit the most serious offenses to go in terms of the state. Now we must account for all those youth locally. So that's been the biggest change. We've been focusing on a plan to be capable of housing older age youth, and we've already started that. So that's been the most recent update.
We'll go over to Annie Hockett. You know, where do most of the youth at this facility come from?
So, yes, we're a regional facility, so we obviously have youth from Tuolumne County that we serve. We also have partnerships with Calaveras County, Amador County, Inyo, Mariposa, and Mono County.
So what are the types of programs that are inside this facility?
Yeah, one thing I think that we do really, really well is our programming. So we have quite a few options for youth depending on what they present with and what their needs are. I would say that we tend to see kind of clusters of needs around issues of drug and alcohol use, mental health issues, anger management. So we typically always have programming targeting those specific areas. And then we also just try to, you know, expose youth to new things. We've had people come in and teach meditation classes, and we have a great partnership with our 4-H folks in our county, showing them how to garden, how to set up irrigation systems. So we really, again, try to look at what the needs of the youth are and then develop case planning and programming around that.
Question for either one of you. You know, if somebody hasn't been inside the facility or had a chance to tour it, can you kind of take us through what the different, you know, types of things are inside?
Well, one thing that's unique about it is it's a co-ed facility, so you'll see both males and females interacting. You know, another thing that people are typically surprised by is that there's a large open housing unit, and the youth are doing various things within the facility. They're out and about. They're not in their cells. They're not, you know, confined in their rooms. And You know, that's one of the things that the state doesn't really allow us to do that, but we've never really done that. But there, what you'll see is there's a classroom, youth often doing classes there. We have youth doing various programs. We have multiple different tracks running within our facility. We have a camp program, which is for some of our more serious youth that, and some of those youth are furloughing out, going to college classes, going to jobs. So, there's a lot of activity with inside the facility. There's a rec room. There's it's a pretty visually stimulating place if you're ever in there.
In Nantahakett, how many people are there on a typical time, the youth who are there?
Yeah, that can certainly fluctuate. I think, the first couple years we had an average daily population of around 8 or 9, and then consistently that has increased. And last year we were running an average daily population of about 14. So, sometimes we have more than that. The highest population we've ever had there is 22 youth, but it's been averaging around that 14, 15 mark for the last year or so.
So the most being 22, would that kind of be the max capacity?
That is the most youth we've ever had there, and that is a lot for kind of the facility, again, being a one-pod entity. And then just with staffing, we want to make sure that we have adequate staff, and when we get 22 youth, that kind of puts some pressure on our staffing.
And then for a juvenile hall, I assume under 18 is the oldest you can be. Is there like a minimum age for the lower end?
There is, depending on kind of the offense, but generally speaking, about 12 is the minimum age, but they have to have had a very serious offense to bring them to our attention at age 12. So generally speaking, our average age is about 16.
What are the type of things that take place that try to, curb recidivism and get these kids on the right path?
Yeah, again, trying to tailor the treatment and the interventions addresses that. If we have a youth that presents to us and they've been struggling with drug and alcohol use, then we are providing programming on that. And we do see some pretty great stability that youth are able to achieve while they're with us. They can get clean and sober. They can have their mental health issues addressed. They can have their health needs met. And so when they are then leaving and returning to the community, they are on some really good footing for being more successful.
I think you both kind of alluded to this earlier, but I think it's unique that the volunteer aspect of the juvenile hall and the community kind of rallying behind these youth as well.
Yeah, we are very fortunate. We have a lot of volunteers that, just kind of come in and provide exposure to different things. We have a really robust religious services volunteer program. We have, as I mentioned, some great volunteers through our 4-H partnerships. And then we've had just community members that say, I have a really great skill of photography, or I'm very interested in Tai Chi. And we've had volunteers come in and share that skill and that expertise with our youth, which has been great.
Are you still looking for volunteers who want to help out?
Yeah, I would say we're always looking. We do a monthly volunteer orientation so that we're always capturing new interest. And we have people come in and just learn about the facility, learn what it takes to become a volunteer. And we're always building up that volunteer population.
You know, when the youth come into the facility, do they still have pretty regular contact with like family members?
Yes. We know that that's really, really important for youth to be able to kind of feel safe, supported, and be positioned to transition well back home. So we do offer visitation. We offer lots of phone contact. We offer special visitation. So we've had, situations where maybe a family member is traveling through California. We've offered special visitation for things like that, just making sure that youth really still remain connected to their family and to their service providers. We offer lots of opportunity for mental health clinicians or teachers or anybody that's the youth deems as an important member of their life. We offer that connection to continue.
How does it work with probation services when adults are in custody? A lot of times they remain on probation. Is that the same with youth, or are they, once they're out of the facility, they go off on their own?
Yeah, as soon as a juvenile is arrested, if they're going to be maintained in custody, they have to be delivered to probation. A probation officer has to take custody of them. And so that typically we do this now at the juvenile hall, where they bring someone in and we assess whether they need to be detained or can they be released with lesser means. Can we, go on electronic monitoring or just put them on house arrest? And, so we use various risk assessment tools, look at the family situation, family dynamics, the type of offense they were booked on. And so whenever there is an opportunity to release them, we do. But, you know, oftentimes it's the probation officer's responsibility essentially to maintain juveniles through the justice system as they're going through it. And, you know, it's so we often have juvenile probation officers working in the facility. It's common for them to, you know, even our adult officers sometimes will work shifts in the facility. And, you know, on that note, I want to go back to what you said when you said 18 being the maximum age. That's, I guess, with juvenile realignment now, the maximum age can be up to 25 for juveniles. And with a track that we're running now, we expect to have 20-year-olds up to 20 in our facility. So, that was essentially what happened with juvenile realignment, is that now we need to provide all of those services that the state may have provided in the terms of DJJ or CYA is what it used to be. We now have to do that locally. So, it's a whole new ballgame.
Need to take a break. We're talking about the Motherlode Regional Juvenile Detention Facility on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host, joined in the studio by Dan Hawks, who is the Chief Probation Officer of Tuolumne County, and the Assistant Probation Officer, Annie Hockett. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Our second segment coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And we welcome you back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We're talking about the Motherlode Regional Juvenile Detention Facility on this weekend show, joined on the program by Dan Hawks, who is the Chief Probation Officer for Tuolumne County, and the Assistant Probation Officer, Annie Hockett. And I'll go back to Dan Hawks. You know, early on when the project was first, you know, developed and created, there were some concerns voiced at county supervisor meetings and members of the community about whether it was financially feasible for the county to take on a facility like this. So can you kind of elaborate on the finances and how this facility is going when it comes to the finances?
Sure. We always had commitments from our regional partners or the county surrounding us to send their youth to this facility. And when it first opened, I don't think we were seeing full utilization from our regional partners. So one of the things we did do is renegotiate all the contracts and kind of changed our pricing scheme so that when we knew that we had regular commitments from those counties, that they would have a guaranteed bed available for them. And so that we offered that at a lower rate to them. And then if they exceeded their guaranteed bed rate, or bed, then they would pay a higher cost for that additional bed. And it's allowed us to manage our facility better. It allows them to be insured or guaranteed that they'll have a space for their youth. And so it's been a really successful way of doing it. It's allowed us to generate revenue, to have an assurance that we're going to have a certain number of youth there so that we can have staffing available at a regular level. But we've also seen a lot of increases from the state. We've gotten our state grant funds have increased, which helps with the facility. Part of it is from the Juvenile Realignment Grant, but there are other grants available that are based on, you know, the types of offenses, the number of juvenile offenders, things like that. And based on our numbers, you know, we're receiving a lot more revenue from the state. So all the way around, I think the cost has gone down significantly in the last 4 years. And, you know, I think each year we're looking better and better.
You know, are you able to say, like, is it kind of like a break-even point as, you know, as opposed to a county that doesn't have a facility versus one that does have one?
Well, I think we're paying less as less general fund revenue is going in to support the cost than it would actually cost if we did not have the facility. And that was, you know, I think that's, you know, I feel that's the case. The county administrator's office looked at it. If we had to contract outside of our county for these, you know, beds, we would be paying a lot more. And so we're really very fortunate to be able to get top-notch juvenile detention services within our county, able to, you know, work with families locally, and, you know, provide youth the best opportunity to be rehabilitated and return to the community, and we're doing it for less money than it would cost if we had to go elsewhere. So.
And I was curious, you mentioned that the realignment and the state of California closing some of its facilities, putting the task on the local counties. Has it been grants that they've been giving the counties to kind of make up for those lost things?
Yeah, that's part of it. There's a guaranteed revenue for taking over certain services. And, you know, now that the state is no longer providing those services, you know, the tricky thing with realignment is that the state never gives you as much money as it costs them. It's a savings for them, too, when they're pulling out of it. So we would like to have more revenue. But, yeah, it's certainly helped. Part of it is from, you know, the state recognizing that we're now doing a lot of the services that they may have provided previously or in the future. And so that certainly helped. And it was also a good reason why, you know, we didn't want to close the facility down when we were coming under scrutiny originally, is because we knew this potentially was looming, and it has come to pass. So, you know, those kinds of detention beds would be very expensive if we had to go elsewhere. And it would be a significant cost to the county to try to secure bed space for those higher needs, higher risk youth elsewhere.
I'm always kind of wondering, what are the types of crimes that get a youth in juvenile hall? Is there like a common trend that you see, or is it kind of wide ranging?
It is wide ranging. You know, we're always looking for, you know, lesser alternatives than detention if it's possible. So there's certain offenses that are required for youth to be detained. If there's any kind of a gun use, you know, the more significant offenses, they're 707B of the Welfare and Institutions Code. Those will guarantee you a spot in the juvenile facility, at least initially, and until we're, you know, through the court process typically. But I can let Annie speak to the more specific ones that we've seen, and it runs the gamut, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I could tell you what the current trend is. I think, as Chief said, we see it all. We see really serious offenses, and we see sometimes minor ones that we are working with the family to try to get that youth released back into the community as soon as possible while wrapping services around them so that they are successful.
Have you witnessed the rehabilitation program reduce recidivism for some of these youth?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the best point of that is when we have kids come back into the facility and say, hey, Annie, guess what? I just got hired at this place. I've got a job. I've got a house. I'm enrolled in classes at college. So, you know, we have those success stories all the time. And it's always so rewarding because these kids want to come back and they just want to say thank you to our staff. We have incredible staff. You know, it's the people that run our programs that make the difference. And so I think we get to see that. And it's always just such a nice treat and reminder of the important work we're doing.
It's pretty awesome. I mean, that's been a new thing that we've seen is youth coming back that, you know, we may not have expected to be success stories, but seeing them not just, you know, being successful, but actually they want to volunteer in the facility. And we've had a number of youth come back, and we've had to kind of reevaluate, you know, our volunteer process. I mean, if just because you may have had some prior justice involvement, does that mean that you shouldn't be allowed to, you know, come in and be a credible messenger to the youth in the facility? And so, yeah, I mean, that's a great thing for us to be dealing with right now.
I assume, too, you feel it's beneficial to keep them local as opposed to having to send them to an out-of-county facility?
Yeah, and at this point, I think, you know, we know that we're seeing good things happening. It's probably going to take years before, you know, statistically we can say for certain, but what we're seeing is youth that are successful in the system, not reentering the adult system right away, you know, not ending up in prison. Yeah, and we used to have a lot of negative influences from outside the county when we were using other facilities. So, yes, that's absolutely fantastic that we're keeping them local.
Need to take one more break. We're talking about the Motherlode Regional Juvenile Detention Facility on this weekend show, joined on the program by Dan Hawks, who is the Chief Probation Officer for Tuolumne County, and Annie Hockett, the Assistant Probation Officer. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Our final segment is coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And we welcome you back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host, getting an update on the Motherlode Regional Juvenile Detention Facility on this weekend show. We're joined in the studio by Annie Hockett, who is the Assistant Probation Officer for Tuolumne County. Also Dan Hawks, who is the Tuolumne County Chief Probation Officer. I'll go back over to Chief Probation Officer Hawks. I know about a year ago we had Sheriff Bill Pooley on the show talking about concerns about staffing when it comes to the jail and limitations that it's created. Have you had, you know, similar type challenges with the juvenile?
Yeah, we're seeing the same issue with probation and with the juvenile facility in particular. It's just we're not attracting the same number of applicants that we used to. And, you know, the county has increased the compensation. We do have our staff qualify for the same level of incentives that the Sheriff's Department staff do. So I really do encourage anyone out there that is looking for a rewarding job. Our juvenile correctional officer position is, you know, it's a decent paying job with good benefits. And if for somebody that really wants to make a difference in the life of a child, I, you know, say take a look at our website. And, you know, we have great staff now, and we're always in need. We constantly have vacancies, and, you know, it's not an easy job. And so we have staff that promote into other positions within our facility or as probation officers, and so we're losing staff. But we also have people that just kind of burn out over time. So we're always in need of good qualified staff. Anyone interested, hey, check us out.
Do you need a certain education or background to go into probation?
So to be a probation officer, you do need a bachelor's degree in a relevant field. But for a juvenile correctional officer position, which really, you know, you can make almost as much as a probation officer, and it doesn't really require any more than a high school, you know, diploma. And so I think we just have a little bit of, it requires some college, but, you know, that's as little as 3 units potentially. So just, you know, anyone that's doesn't really know what they want to do, but they're looking for something rewarding and they want to make a difference, you know, check us out.
I'll go back over to Annie Hockett. You mentioned earlier the gardens at the facility that 4-H helps with, and I know our reporter Tracy Peterson went out there a while back and did kind of a feature story on that. It really is kind of a unique aspect for the juvenile hall, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. The kids love it. You know, our volunteers are amazing. And what's been really unique, I think, about that is we've gotten the youth involved in the development and expansion of the garden. So they were the ones that wrote the grant to get the lumber to build the raised beds. They were working hand in hand with our volunteers to build the irrigation system. They're right now developing kind of a space at the facility to do a pollinator garden. So the kids they love it. They get to Friday, they were barbecuing zucchini, and some of the kids were like, wow, I didn't even know you could barbecue zucchini. So they get to just be exposed to what grows out of the ground and how to care for it. And, you know, along with that comes responsibility of making sure we're taking care of the garden. So it's teaching those lessons kind of all the way around.
I'll go back over to Dan Hawks. We've heard a little bit about the mental health crisis when it comes to youth and challenges across the state and the lack of services. Has that had an impact on the juvenile hall as well?
Oh, absolutely. Our youth that are coming in have such great needs in terms of, you know, behavioral health needs. A lot of them come to us with a lot of prior trauma. And, you know, that's the one you know, measure that's really been a challenge for us, because there is a shortage of psychiatric beds available for juveniles throughout the state anyways. But when you add the juvenile justice component to it, there really isn't anything available. And, you know, so we have to rise up and work with behavioral health, work with our staff to, you know, keep kids safe, get them the treatment they need, and provide the services in custody. It's not ideal, but, You know, occasionally we'll have some, you know, serious situations occur where we have to work hard to try to find a psychiatric bed for one of our detained youth, and it's practically impossible. It does occur, but it is very difficult. So we have to be able to manage and meet their needs locally, and that's one of our biggest challenges right now.
You know, in an overall sense, when you look back, you know, decades, 20, 30 years into the past to now, have you seen a lot of changes when it comes to juvenile detention?
Yeah, well, I've been doing this for 23 years, and, you know, I had been to the California Youth Authority to visit youth that I had sent there, and I can tell you it was not a good place, and we did not see good outcomes with the youth that we did send there. And yes, I think things have changed drastically. I mean, the Youth Authority was built and replicated a sort of adult prison system for kids. You know, and I can even speak from a personal level. My dad was involved in the justice system and, you know, was arrested for joyriding, and he ended up graduating high school from California Youth Authority. It was a horrible experience for him, and, you know, I remember him talking about it, and I think it's taken a long time for things to turn around, but, you know, part of the realignment process is kind of the states acknowledging that counties can do a better job, and that's, you know, that's what we're trying to do now.
Yeah, very interesting. You know, we talked a lot about the juvenile hall. Anything else, you know, not related to the juvenile hall, but probation that would be new and interesting and worth bringing up?
One of the exciting things we have happening right now is we just recently were awarded a grant from the state to provide mobile probation services. So we actually just recently purchased a Sprinter van, fully equipped. And the goal is to get out and bring probation to our people that may have kind of dropped off, and specifically the unhoused. And so our goal is to get out with service providers, and, you know, different care providers, social workers, and try to find our people that we know are out there that are unhoused, and get them back on track with probation, and get them, you know, services potentially to help get them stabilized. But so the goal is to bring probation to them, and it's a brand new thing. We just bought the RV, and we're looking forward to getting out there and using it. So pretty exciting.
Yeah, so it's an RV that'll travel to different locations all around the county?
Yes, and it's specifically we'll be looking at, you know, those areas where there may be homeless encampments, where we suspect some of our people may be, you know, maybe they're on warrant status, or, you know, maybe they haven't been reporting like they should. And so the goal will be to get out there and try to assist them to get in a better situation, to provide them services so they aren't, you know, unhoused, and to really kind of just get them back on track. We're not necessarily going out to make arrests. We're going out to find ways to get them back in compliance without having to you know, make arrests. So it's sort of a unique approach, but we know it's worked in other counties, and we were fortunate enough to get the grant, and so we look forward to providing that service locally.
Maybe they'll find jobs, find new housing, and get, as you say, get back on their feet again.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, our, you know, our police chief is doing some of that right now. And so we're going to be going out with him later this week. And, you know, we don't want to see the unhoused end up in custody just because they're unhoused. And so the goal is to try to find ways to provide them a level of services where they can, you know, be in compliance and do the things they're required to do. And so, yeah, that's what it's all about.
Got about a minute left on this weekend's Motherload Views. I'll go back to Annie Hockett. Any closing comments you'd like to make?
No, just thank you again for having us. You know, we, going back to the facility, we are just, you know, very thankful again for our staff, for all our partners, our community-based organizations that work with us. And we feel that we have lots of exciting things coming up, and we're excited to do the work.
And Dan Hawks, any final comments you'd like to make?
Well, anybody looking for a job that is really wants to make a difference in the community, or if you know anyone that wants to volunteer in the facility, check us out. We, you know, I think it's one of the things that makes our facility great, and you know, we're always looking. Thank you.
We appreciate the update from both of you on the Motherlode Regional Juvenile Detention Facility. We've been talking with Dan Hawks and Annie Hockett. I'm PJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. We'll see you back next week for more Motherlode Views.
You've been listening to Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.